DNA synthesis. So now what we've covered is we've kind of looked introductorily at the bases, and remember those five of them, you need to know the structures. You should also know how they pair and be able to draw those hydrogen bonds that form in the pairs, and those pictures are in your notes. We talked about then, after introducing those bases, how are they synthesized, and we just went over in some detail what's important about the synthesis of purines and pyrimidines. And so now that we've kind of got that, we're going to talk about how do we put them together as polymers, or in other words, how do we make DNA, which remember is where we're storing all of our genetic information. And then the last thing we'll look at is how do we pass that on to RNA, and then ultimately move, remember looking at the very first picture we looked at in the genetic section, going through that pathway, how does the messenger RNA pick that up, pick up the information for the DNA and how and what proteins to make, and then code. And then back when we talked about proteins, we talked about the three-letter codons and how we actually get proteins and then their process, of course, into fully functional active proteins. So DNA, of course, Watson and Crick, discoverers, and again, I think it was last year, 2002 was an anniversary, the 50th, on the discovery, particularly of the structure. And by doing that, they basically discovered that information could be duplicated and passed on. So they kind of discovered that whole, how that happens. And basically what happens is by discovering the structure, they realize that it's double-stranded. We always call it double-stranded. The double helix, and it actually opens itself up, and half of it serves as a template for synthesis of daughter strands. And there's two types of replication, conservative and semi-conservative. And you'll notice, again, looking at our keyword, semi-conservative is going to be the key one. And in conservative replication, if there was conservative replication, the two daughter strands would go to one daughter cell and two parental strands would go to the other daughter cell. But in semi-conservative replication, you will notice that there's one parental and one what we call daughter, which we can also think of as like new strand, the one that's synthesized based on the template. So the way the DNA replicates itself, synthesizes itself, is the double helix opens up, making a template, and then we get two pieces, one of each piece of the original thing, which is the dark lines you see in your picture, and then the new daughter strand, which is what base pairs with that. And basically they did a lot of experimentation and determined, again, key, semi-conservative is the way the DNA replicates itself. And you can kind of look through the experiment that they did. They used basically radioactive nitrogen. And so by using nitrogen that you could look at in some way in the lab, you could see where things were moving, where things are going. And again, they discovered that the way the DNA replicates is to split apart, making template, and then you get two new pieces, one each, has half parental and half new, or what we call daughter strand. So the DNA synthesis or replication, we can use either word, starts at a specific place on a chromosome, which is called the origin, which kind of makes sense. The origin is the starting place. And basically, in each of the two mechanisms, conservative and semi-conservative, as you look through them, in the conservative model, basically, picture below. Okay, let's go to that picture. Are we on that picture? Yeah. So there's a lot of words here in between the pictures. No, I moved it up, so I've got the old notes. Okay, good. So we're talking about this picture, which used to be separated by a long distance, and we're talking about parts A and part B of the picture and part C of the picture. And the first little paragraph or couple of sentences is referring to part A, second mechanism is part B, and the third mechanism is part C that you see there. And as you look at the first little picture, again, we're starting at a place called an origin. The site at which the two strands are replicated is called the replication fork. There's a fork. And the fork always moves in one direction. And let's see, no, I'm talking about B. So let's go back. We're talking about A. The first mechanism, the daughter strand again, is initiated at an origin on the parental strand. And then you've got the same thing going on the opposite parental strand. And one strand grows from each origin. And this is basically the way viruses tend to replicate. Bacteria tend to use the second mechanism, which is replication of both strands is initiated from the same origin. And then finally at the last picture, which is C, is the way we replicate, which is the only one that we really want to focus on. And in that one, there's two replication forks that are initiated at the origin. And the two forks kind of migrate away from each other, and we call that bidirectional. And most mammals, so we're going to include ourselves in that, use bidirectional replication. So bidirectional replication. So you've got movement from a single origin in both directions. So it's bidirectional. Goes right, goes left. Goes right and goes left. So that's the one we care about. Again, the first one is viruses. The second one, a lot of bacteria. And the third one is the one we, the way we replicate DNA. There's four components that we need to initiate this synthesis from the origin out bidirectionally and to propagate it. That is, we need a substrate, a template, a primer, and a whole bunch of different enzymes. Substrates, deoxyribonucleotides, DATP, DGTP, GTTP, and DCTP. So again, we need our bases, which have now joined with a ribosugar and phosphate groups, and we need them all deoxy, which remember on the ribose ring, position 2, carbon 2 prime, lost its OH group. That's what the deoxy means. The high-energy phosphate bond that is between the alpha and beta phosphates on these nucleotides is cleaved, and the deoxy monophosphate nucleotide is then incorporated into the DNA strand. And that cleavage of that phosphate bond, we're going to see just directly after the next exam, gives us energy. So the reason that's important, and we mentioned that that bond between the alpha and the beta phosphate groups is cleaved and we call it high energy, is that's what provides the energy for this polymerization that's occurring as we join these nucleotides together. We'll talk about RNA. We won't worry about that. The template, which remember tells us how to do this. That's basically what a template is. You can have templates of all different kinds of things, and they basically guide and direct what's going on. And the template tells us which nucleotide is to be coordinated next. The growing DNA chain is selected by base pairing, so we basically base pair to the template strand of the parental DNA. And of course we know about complementarity, so we have certain bases that pair with certain bases, so that leads us along and we base pair according to the template or the parental strand. The primer is DNA polymerases, and there's lots of them, and we're going to look at a couple of them. The enzyme that synthesizes DNA is called a DNA polymerase. And basically a DNA polymerase can only add the nucleotides to an already existing strand or primer of DNA or an RNA that's paired with the template. So again, it needs that parental strand, it needs the template in order to be able to start to base pair and add nucleotides. There's lots of enzymes. Again, the DNA polymerase is what covalently joins the incoming nucleotide to the primer. And to initiate and sustain this whole process, which is pretty complex, we call replication, requires lots of proteins and lots of enzymes, and they all assemble into something called a replisome. A replisome. Is that one of our words? Yep, there it is. So as we're moving down, we now know it's semi-conservative, one parental, one daughter, bidirectional, moves out from the fork. We need a primer. DNA polymerase is the enzyme that actually allows us to add the bases to the template. The replisome is that very complex thing that we're not going to go into detail about all the different proteins and enzymes that are there. But basically, the replisome spools the DNA through and replicates it as it passes through. And we'll see kind of a little bit of a nasty looking picture of that that might or might not help in thinking about that. As we're talking about DNA synthesis, we always want to keep in mind that we're always going in the 5' to 3' direction. The major catalytic step, you can see there's a little picture of it. Again, 5' to 3', incoming nucleotide first base pairs with the template, and then it's linked to the nucleotide on the primer, and so it gives you a little picture of things coming in and adding to the template. So again, it's all based on base pairing. It's based on complementarity. We know which bases go with which, so that everything adds up exactly. We have as many purines and pyrimidines base paired together exactly. Semi-discontinuous, what does that mean? DNA synthesis is semi-discontinuous. And since all known DNA polymerases, which remembers the key enzyme, can synthesize only in a 5-3 direction, that becomes a problem with what we call bidirectional synthesis. Because remember, the bidirectional synthesis started at a single origin and went out in two different ways. Well, if we're going to do that, we have a problem since we can only go 5' to 3'. And you can see that in this picture here. Part of it is pretty obvious. Where we're synthesizing in a 5' to 3' direction, that's pretty direct. And that we can do directly with DNA polymerases in the replisome. But notice that the top part, strand, has to be basically synthesized discontinuously, is what we call it. And it's replicated in short stretches as we go along, because we're kind of going in an opposite direction. We'll see how does it do that. The strand that's continually synthesized, the easy one that goes 5' to 3', is leading. We call it the leading strand. And the other one is called the lagging strand, because it lags behind a little bit. It's done in a semi-discontinuous fashion. So again, here we have the fork with the single origin, and we have bidirectional movement from the fork along the template. Semi-discontinuous. We've got a leading and a lagging strand. Talk about the easy one first, the leading strand. Again, the DNA polymerases only work in a 5' to 3' direction. You've got a primase, an enzyme that starts this thing off from the origin. The DNA polymerase keeps adding base pairs, and we get elongation. So leading strand synthesis, fairly simple. Lagging strand, not simple. This is where we start to get in a number of enzymes, and it involves actually 5 steps. And the first step, as the leading strand is synthesized along the lower parental strand, the top parental strand becomes exposed. So as we start to move, synthesizing from right here, we're basically breaking apart. So the DNA starts together, and we pick a place, an origin, and we start doing this, and we're basically opening up this alpha helix. And as we do that, we're exposing the base pairs on the top parental strand. And as that strand gets exposed, it's recognized by a primase. So that's another enzyme. That primase recognizes the top part of that strand as we begin to expose it, and it synthesizes a very short RNA primer. So that's the first step. The next is that DNA polymerase then incorporates a mononucleotide onto the 3' end of the primer to initiate lagging strand synthesis. The polymerase then builds that primer for about 1,000 nucleotides until it comes in contact with the 5' end of the preceding primer. And these short little fragments of RNA DNA are called Ozaki fragments. Ozaki fragments. So again, we're doing a fragmented thing. In step 3, when that polymerase then encounters the preceding primer, it can dissociate. So the polymerase has done its thing. At that point, the RNA, that little primer that we made of RNA, we can get rid of that. We don't need it anymore. And it's removed by another DNA polymerase. Remember, I said there's lots of them, all with different functions. And it is an enzyme called RNase H, capital R, capital N, A-S-E-H. That's what removes that little RNA primer that we needed to get started. Then the ribonucleotides are excised, taken out, excised one at a time in a 5-3' direction. When the RNA is finished, it leaves a little gap. So the phosphate group at the 5' end of the adjoining DNA segment leaves a tiny nick, a tiny gap that we need to fill. And the gap is filled by another DNA polymerase, which is called ligase. It's a ligase. And again, the name, it basically ligates it together and fills in that gap. So the 3' hydroxyl on the 3' end of the nucleotide is covalently joined to the 5' phosphate of the previous little piece of lagging segment by the ligase. So that's finally the very last step. So you can see it's 5 steps kind of versus 1 step to do the lagging strand synthesis. So it's slower, it lags behind, requires all these enzymes, all these steps, these 5 steps. Again, our important words all in there for lagging strand, Ozaki fragments, and some of these enzymes, the ligase, and again the DNA polymerases. This little table shows you some DNA polymerases, not particularly important. You don't need to memorize the table, but it gives you an idea that there's a number of different DNA polymerases, and they have different activities. They have primases, replication. Some of them are work on repairs, we'll see. Some of them are exonucleases, and they basically can excise or take out things. They can fill gaps. They proofread. They repair, and they're involved in, of course, in replication. So polymerases do a lot of different things. That's kind of the main gist of DNA synthesis. Now, there's other factors that are required for all of this to happen. And some of them we're going to look at. Origins. What makes the origin? How do we get the origin? And basically, the origin is a unique DNA sequence that's recognized by a protein that then builds the replisome, which is the little machine that's full of enzymes and proteins that basically squeezes out this replicating DNA. They've been found in bacterial, plasmid, viral yeast, and mitochondrial DNA, but not in mammalian DNA. But since they have found them in yeast chromosomes, it's likely that humans do a very similar thing in terms of the origin. What is the origin? It's some unique sequence, undoubtedly, that's recognized that begins to then build the replisome. Transacting factors. There's a number of them. Basically, transacting factors, and you have a list of them, are pretty much all enzymes, with a couple of exceptions. So that's your list of transacting factors. Their origin binding proteins, helicases, single-stranded DNA binding proteins, primases, DNA polymerases, processivity factors, topoisomerases, RNase H, and ligase. So it's basically a list of all the different things that we need. Very short definitions with them, which is helpful. Origin binding protein basically binds and partially denatures the origin while binding another enzyme called a helicase. So basically at the origin, you have an origin binding protein that needs to begin the process by making a little opening. So you've got to begin to separate these strands of this double helix. And that's basically what the origin binding protein begins to do. It brings in the helicase. Notice the helicase is what unwinds the helix. So it basically unwinds the strand. The single-stranded DNA binding protein, which we never say that, is called an SSB, enhances the activity of the helicase and prevents the DNA that we've unwound from rewinding. So it's kind of hard to do. It's almost like a spring or something. It wants to go back to that shape. So the SSB basically stops it from doing that, going back. Primase, again, synthesize the RNA primers, and we need an RNA primer to initiate things. The DNA polymerase recognizes the primer, and then begins adding the bases or extending the DNA in a 5-to-3' direction. A processivity factor helps load the polymerase, the DNA polymerase, onto the template, and so it anchors itself to the template and to the new DNA. So it kind of acts like a glue that holds everything together, processivity factors. A topoisomerase is an enzyme that removes supercoils from the fork as it unwinds. So again, it's part of the unwinding factor, the helicase and the topoisomerase. Kind of get the thing so that we can get it apart, exposing the bases, making the template so that we can then get transcription. RNase-H removes the RNA primers from the Ozaki fragments, which remember are the little fragments that we're building when we do lagging strand synthesis. Any nicks that are left, and we're going to see this when we talk about repair, because there's going to be mutations and we can basically open these things up and pull things out and leave, we leave nicks, is always sealed by a ligase. There needs to be coordination, and the next picture is not terribly easily understandable. Don't spend a lot of time on that picture. It kind of tries to give you an idea, a little bit of the replosome and how the replosome basically opens this thing up and squeezes out the newly replicated synthesized DNA. They're coordinated at the fork, which makes sense, and they're held together. And the main thing to know is that they are coordinated so that they're kind of moving along at the same time frame so that we end up with everything being coordinated at the end. That's the basic gist of it. So don't worry too much about the picture. It basically shows the fork where we've opened it up. It shows the leading and lagging strands, and they basically coordinate together. Telomerase is that one of our words, Jeff? Ligase fills the next. What is a telomerase? Leading strand synthesis proceeds all the way to the end of the chromosome. Lagging strand synthesis can't. The tip, the 3' tip of each daughter chromosome would not be complete without telomerase. And basically the meaning of the word a telomerase is a telomere terminal transferase. Doesn't help much. But basically what it does is it extends the 3' end of the chromosome by adding numerous repeats of a 6-base pair sequence. So it takes a particular 6-base pair sequence and keeps adding that on until it hits the end of the chromosome. So it kind of finishes off the lagging strand synthesis. Let's see, anything else interesting there? That's basically what it does. Telomeres. Let's see if anything else. That's obviously critical to get to the end of the chromosome. They're looking at telomerase as a possible pharmacological area. It's probably necessary for proliferation of tumor cells as is necessary for proliferation of normal cells. It's actually been found to be active in ovarian cancer cells, but not normal ovarian tissues, so there may be some way to make some kind of anti-tumor drugs based on what telomerase does, which is extending the lagging strand all the way to the very tip, the 3' end, which there would be a little gap there if it didn't do that. Chemical inhibitors, again, you don't need to know anything about them particularly, but they are all inhibitors of DNA replication. There's something called substrate analogs, and as you look at those, they kind of basically look like the bases. And so the idea is to find something that will be chain terminators, in other words, stop DNA replication. And so you want it to look as much like the base, in other words, kind of trick the DNA polymerase into thinking that this is a base and basically incorporate it in, which stops the whole process. Those are what substrate analogs are. Some of them you probably have heard of. AZT, used in the anti-HIV drug. It was more effective, unfortunately, in culture experiments. Acyclovir is, they were hoping, a really great antiviral drug. It does help in some instances, but nothing has been really very great in terms of antivirals, but you've probably heard of those, AZT and acyclovir. Intercalating agents are compounds with fused aromatic systems that intercalate themselves, and intercalate is a word that means wedge themselves in between the stacked pairs of DNA bases, and they disrupt the structure so that replication can't occur. DNA damaging agents, cisplatin, you may have heard of that as well. That's a chemotherapeutic agent. Chemotherapy, you can treat some cancers.